Good evening, everyone. I want to thank everybody for joining us. We're going to be starting a Chabura after the 9 o'clock Maariv on Tuesdays and Thursdays on the topic of the Mesilas Yesharim. It's part of our Garden Mermelstein Chodesh of Inspiration, our month of inspiration heading into the Yom HaRaim and the New Year. And in general, we'll spend 10 to 20 minutes, usually probably around 15 minutes together on Tuesday and Thursday nights, exploring one of the classic works, if not the single most classic and central work of the Musar canon, as an appropriate preparation for the weighty days ahead. Now for tonight, I want to offer some words of introduction, a little history of the author of the work, the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, the work itself, the Mesilas Yesharim, and what our goals are going to be moving forward, and then we will head into the Hakdamas HaRav HaMechaber, the introduction to the Sefer. The Ramchal lives from 1707 to 1746. He actually had a very short life, very few years on this earth, but he was an extraordinarily prolific writer who wrote hundreds of treatises during that short time that he had here. In his time, he was actually quite controversial. He engaged in Kabbalah, and to engage in Kabbalah at such a young age was indeed quite controversial at the time. Remember, this is coming on the heels of Shabtai Tzvi, so people saw Sabbatean kinds of overtones or influences in the Ramchal's writings, and therefore at the time he was very controversial. But over time, the Ramchal's Torah withstood the test of time, and people came to appreciate the depth and greatness of the Ramchal. And his magnum opus, certainly his work that's most extensively studied, is the Mesilas Yesharim. The Mesilas Yesharim is more of a Musar work than it is an overtly Kabbalistic work. It certainly has Kabbalah involved, and it certainly has, again, much Torah and Ma'amari Chazal in it, but mostly it's a guide towards self-improvement, towards working on ourselves and becoming the best that we can be. The work was effusively praised by the Vilna Gaon, who said that the first 10 prakim or 12 prakim don't have a single extra word in them, and indeed we're going to be focusing on those early prakim over the course of the next several weeks. And like I said, it has become perhaps the most central work in the Musar canon. When Rabbi Yisrael Salanter started the Musar movement, it was the Mesilas Yesharim that really became the foundation or the bedrock of the Musar movement, the most central work in Musar. Now, there are different ways of learning Mesilas Yesharim. There are many different ways of learning Mesilas Yesharim. And the approach that we are going to take is as follows. We're not going to be reading the work line by line inside. What we're going to do is we're going to take a perek a night, or I guess two prakim a week, every Tuesday and Thursday. I'm going to try to capture some of the major themes of the perek and really just take out one kernel, one idea from each perek. That will be a takeaway for us as we move through the Sefer. Of course, people are welcome and encouraged to read the work. There are great English translations of it. I'm using the Feldheim version, which is a very popular publishing of the Mesilas Yesharim. It comes in, I see a number of other people have it here also. It comes with a neatly packaged English translation, shoulder notes, and the like, and there are other English translations as well. Of course, the more you put into any work, the more you'll be able to take out from it. So if people are so inspired to go through the Sefer as we go through it together, whether it be in the original Hebrew or an English translation, of course, that is always worthwhile. But together, we're just going to try to take one central feature or one central idea from each parak as we move through the Sefer. And we're going to start with the Hakdama, the introduction to a Sefer. Introductions are a tricky thing. Sometimes introductions are absolutely essential to a work, and it's hard to understand the work at all if you don't have the introduction. Sometimes they're kind of just a tag-along that are not as essential. And certainly in the case of the Mesilas Yesharim, the Hakdama fits into the former category. Perhaps the most famous and well-studied perek of the Mesilas Yesharim is not a perek of Mesilas Yesharim at all, but rather the Hakdama Samachaber, the introduction of the Ramchal. Now, in the introduction, he kind of frames his view of the Sefer. And he writes that the Sefer is not intended to provide any chidushim. He comes along and says straight out, it's hardly self-advertising. He comes out and says, I'm not here to teach you anything new. So if you stopped reading there, you'd say, why am I learning this Sefer at all? But he says, I'm actually here to remind you of truths that you will deem to be self-evident, but perhaps sometimes overlook. He talks about the importance of focusing on really the concept of Musar, 150 years before the Musar movement started, the notion that we need to actually focus intellectually, cognitively, on the process of self-improvement. We can't just take it for granted that we are going to improve. When we study and we devote our cognitive faculties to the study of Torah, it can't just be to understanding sugyas in the Gemara or understanding halacha, but we need to actually make a concentrated effort and a conscious, cognitive concentrated effort on the process of self-improvement as well. And if we don't, there's no way we will actually achieve personal improvement in our lives. And the line that I want to focus on for tonight is a line that appears at the very beginning. It's a line that when you first read it is remarkably counterintuitive. It's a line that doesn't seem to make much sense when you first read it. But when you reflect upon it further and you contextualize it in terms of the realities, the lived realities of our own lives, it's a line of penetrating psychological insight that I think is deeply true for most of humanity. Certainly speaking for myself, it is certainly true. And it's something that I think is something that resonates as deeply true, even though at the outset it seems counterintuitive and wrong. He starts by talking about, again, how he's not looking to teach new things. Not looking to teach people things that they don't know. I'm looking to remind them of things that they know already, and that is not just something that they know, but it's evident, it's clearly and widely understood. And then at the very end of the first paragraph, he adds the following line. Elo shekefi rov pirsumam, uchineged masha amitam geluya lakol, kach ha'hela mehem matzoi me'od, v'hashik harava. He says, precisely because they are so widely known, precisely because they are self-evident, amitam geluya lakol, everybody is aware of these basic self-evident truths. Precisely because of that, kach ha'hela mehem matzoi me'od, v'hashik harava. Therefore, they are so frequently overlooked, and they are so often forgotten. It's almost like he's saying that proportional to the degree to which they are self-evident is the degree to which they are forgotten. And again, at first glance, that's a remarkably counterintuitive line. If something is self-evident, if it's understood, if it's pirsum, it's mefursum bepirsum gadol, it's widely known by everyone, amitam geluya lakol, it's so basic that it is self-evident to everyone, then how can you, within the same breath or within the very end of the same sentence, say that it is widely forgotten and overlooked? And what's more is that, again, if you look at the way he constructs the line, it sounds like he's almost saying there's a proportional relationship. The more these things are self-evident, the more they are forgotten. And again, which is more counterintuitive. You're telling me that if something is more self-evident, it's more widely overlooked. It's a line that at the outset seems strange, perplexing, and odd. But like again, when you reflect upon the line and you contextualize it, it's a line that speaks deep truths about the realities of our human experience. And that is because it is a standard but also tragic feature of human experience that we do indeed take for granted the things that are most basic, the things that are most central, are often the things that we just don't think about precisely because they are so basic. And I'll give classic examples in the spirit of the Ramchal, examples that are not new to anyone, but examples that every now and then we need to reflect upon. If I would ask everyone heading into Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, what's the most important thing that we're davening for? I think probably if we took a poll of the populace at large, people would probably say health as the number one option, right? Without your health, you don't have anything. Health for yourself, health for your family. That's probably the thing that we would identify as the most important thing. We talk about health, bracha, parnasa, hatzlacha, right? We have the standard things that we wish to other people in advance of the yamim noraim, the values that we hold dear and the things that we cherish most as we head into these days of judgment. But it is also true that, I'll speak for me personally, and I think I'll speak for many of us, that health is something that we only appreciate, or certainly most appreciate, when it's taken away. When it's taken away. On the day-to-day, maybe if we're really concentrating during our davening, during modim, we'll have a moment when we're reflective upon how appreciative we need to be for our health. But most of the time, we're not thinking about it or appreciating it unless there's a moment of crisis. When there's a moment of crisis, when health is taken away, when there's Rahman al-Islam, a diagnosis, when we learn about someone in our family that's ill and gravely ill, then we all of a sudden think, wow, we need to be so appreciative for the health that we have. But in the moments when we're doing okay, we don't really think about it all that much. It's not so active at the forefront of our consciousness. It's something that we file away, maybe, but it's not something that we're thinking about actively. I mean, one of the things about being a rav, about being a rabbi, one of the great blessings and one of the great challenges of being a rav is that you learn a lot about the tsaros that are going on in the world, in our community, and in people's lives. And of course, that's very taxing because, unfortunately, there is so much tsar that exists behind the scenes in the people in our lives. It's extraordinarily rewarding because when you can help with that and you could be a force to help people move through those tsaros and navigate them, there's nothing more rewarding. But it just increases sensitivity to things that perhaps, again, speaking personally for myself, that I wasn't necessarily entirely sensitive to beforehand. Again, a basic example, this is not intended, again, in the spirit of the Ramchal, not intended to be anything new. But you take a difficult day spent with kids. I have young children. And some days are hard. This is the week between camp and school. Maybe some of you can relate to that personally. And it's not exactly so easy. Just speaking for myself today, today was not an easy day. You're trying to work. My wife works full time. We're trying to take care of the kids as well, not neglect them, make sure they're entertained, make sure they're not killing each other. It's not always an easy task. And you sit at the end of the day exhausted, thinking about what a hard day it was. And that's a very natural and fair emotion and feeling. It was a difficult day. It was taxing. It wasn't easy. But then you spend just the extra moment, the extra mental energy, thinking about how many people would have given anything to have the day that you had. How many people would have sacrificed anything to go through your really hard, difficult day. And as a Rav, personally, I could think off of the top of my head of so many people who would have done anything for it. So many people who are looking to have children either can't find the right person or are still searching, or have found the right person and are going through all sorts of invasive treatments to try to have children. Or the people who have had children, but Rahman al-Islam no longer do. You know, the people, I know, unfortunately, a couple recently who had one child, and it was a miracle baby, and they prayed for him for many years. And soon after his bar mitzvah, he was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and he, Rahman al-Islam, passed away recently. And I think to myself on days like this, what would his mother have given for the day that I had? What would she have given for the? She would have given anything for the difficult day that I had. But I don't appreciate it. Because again, it's not my fault. It's just a feature of human nature that often the things that are most basic, we just tend to take for granted. And it's true of so many other elements of our lives. I could talk about the medical students that used to spend the summer offering medical care in Uganda or Rwanda, and then would come back and say that they would never turn on the sink in the morning to brush their teeth the same way. When you spend time in a place without running water, your shower, your hot shower at night before you go to bed is never the same experience. But we don't appreciate those things. It's not even on our radar screen. Because kefi persumam, uchenegin masha amitam guluya lakol, proportionate and commensurate to how basic they are, is precisely the degree to which we ignore them and the degree to which we overlook them. And the same is true in our spiritual lives as well. The same is true in our spiritual lives as well. If I would ask people about our values and take a poll as to what's more important, being a good, decent person, being a good, decent Jew, or achieving or pursuing material wealth and success, I think most people, maybe I'm a false optimist, but I think most people would say that being a good, decent human being and a good Jew is higher up on their value system, on their personal axiology, than pursuing wealth and material success. I really think that most people would say that. And I'll go a step further. I think most people genuinely believe that. A cynic will say, yeah, people will pay lip service to the value of being a good person and being a good Oved Hashem, but it's not really important to them. I don't believe that. I really believe that when most people say that at the top of their value system is pursuing a life of values and decency and morality and Torah and mitzvos, they really believe that. But if you, again, just take a moment to follow up the question with a natural follow-up question. Okay, so what are you doing to pursue those goals? It's very easy to delineate exactly what we're doing to pursue material wealth and success. It's very easily defined. It's very concrete. We all have our professional aspirations and the things that we do, and it's very easy to itemize or identify all the things that we're doing to pursue those goals. But take the next question. What are you doing currently to be a better person? What are you currently doing to be a better Oved Hashem? It's a harder question to answer. It's not so simple. It's not so straightforward. And maybe some of us can identify a particular area that we are actively working on. I know that I have this particular shortcoming in this area of my midos, a propensity to anger, towards a lack of generosity, whatever the case may be. I'm working better on being a more appreciative person. We might have individual areas that we are working on, but many of us, I would say, do not. And not by a fault. We're not actively working on getting better in our davening or our learning, despite the fact that we genuinely believe that those things are most important in our lives. And it's due to this precise paradox of human psychology and human nature that the Ramchal highlights at the very beginning. Those things that are most basic are most often the things that we overlook. The first step in the process of teshuva that we so actively embrace this time of year, the first step in pursuing genuine self-improvement, is just getting in touch with the things that we know to be true. Getting in touch with our own values, and not just recognizing them on a pure cognitive level, but trying to take the next step of translating those values and making them real, making them genuine, taking active steps in our lives to actually pursue them. When we can take that reflective moment to recognize the things that we hold to be most valuable, and we can actively pursue those things and translate them into action, then we are taking the first step towards teshuva. And then moving forward, we can work on the program towards actually pragmatically pursuing those goals, as long as we first bother to recognize them as a reality in the first place.